education revolution, and well, of all places in the world, everybody, today I am in Denver, Colorado, and as you've no doubt heard by now, there's an incredible tragedy that has happened in this area, in Jefferson County. The reason why I'm out here is because I'm going tomorrow to an education conference. Maybe this is ironic. It's an alternative education conference of an organization that wants to change the whole education system into one that really responds to kids' needs in a better way than happens in the traditional public school system. And so that is one aspect of what I want to talk about tonight in exploring. And for those of you who haven't happened to have heard it, there was there were at least two students who came into a public high school, Columbine High School in Littleton, Colorado, right near here. Between shooting and bombs and so on, killed perhaps 25 students, and there maybe 20 others injured. There's never been anything like this before in this country. And in fact, I think even in terms of other kinds of tragedies in Colorado, someone said this was even bigger than a plane crash that happened here. It's unbelievable. People are just so stunned. And I'm out here, as I said, I came out by train. We got off the train this morning, and I was with a group of students and teachers from an alternative school in Albany, New York, interracial inner city school. And they had students from, say, 12 to 14, 15. And we're going to this conference starting tomorrow. I have a couple of guests who will be on the show tonight who are from Jefferson County and who've been involved in starting alternative schools. And I think we want to talk to them a little bit about what's happened there, and we will be open later on for your phone calls and for your comments and your feelings about this whole situation. I have, I think, on the line Arnie Langberg. Arnie, are you there? Hello, Arnie. Can you hear me?
I'm still with you. Hello.
Hi, Arnie. How you doing?
Okay, Jerry. How are you?
Well, you know, I called you earlier today when I heard about this incredible tragedy because I was particularly interested in your take on what's happened. Now, for those people who don't know who you are, I consider you one of the most important pioneers in the field of public alternative education, having started public alternative schools as long as, 25 years ago, or is it more?
Let's see, 1970, the Great Neck Village School.
Right.
So it's almost 30 years now.
Oh, my God, almost 30 years ago. And then you came out here and started the Jefferson County Open School.
The high school portion, Mountain Open High in 75.
Mountain Open,
and
right.
It's now part of a K-12 school, yeah.
Right. And so this school where this shooting and these bombs and so on took place, how far away is that from the school that you started?
Well, it's all in the same school district, and we'd have a number of students at our school who would be in the Columbine neighborhood and so on. So the geographic distance is maybe fairly large just because the county's large, but we're in the same district and a lot of the same kids. So,
right.
So I guess you could say the cultural distance and then maybe the psychological distance is very small.
And would you have ever predicted that something like this could have happened in your area?
Whew. How do you predict something like this? But you can, you know, not the extent of it, but the possibility of expressions of rage. Yeah, I mean that's been happening all over, and you know some people have the illusion that it's only an inner city manifestation, but I think we know better than that. It's, there's no words to describe it. It's the tragedy of it, but there are signs of these kinds of things going on throughout our society. I mean, in most cases, right, the last few years, we've been hearing about younger kids doing it, right?
Right.
And now it's older kids, and it's with automatic weapons, and it's a mass destruction.
Now, when you started your public alternative schools, what would you say was your main purpose in doing that?
Well, it's not unrelated to some of today, because the students themselves would tell us that they felt anonymous in their big schools. They were just a number, and they wanted mm-hmm. to be in a place where they could be, the way they put it, where they could be me, where at least they were given a chance to be known as a person rather than just as a number. And I think that the anonymity of big institutions contributes to some of the kinds of problems we had today, and that was a major motivation, I think, for most of the kids who came to us, who still came to those schools.
I heard kids interviewed on television who said that these kids were outcasts from the group and so on, you know, that they went around in trench coats and they, you know, were clearly kind of having some problems in that respect. One of the things I would point out is that the school that these kids were in was a school of something like, I heard different figures, 1,800 to 2,000 students. And the schools, the public alternatives that you started, the programs, how many students were in those schools?
Well, when I was last with Open High, we had about 250 students.
250. Now, do you think in a school of 250 students that you would know more about what kids like this were up to and maybe have a different way of dealing with it?
Of course. And when you say I would, you know, you would know. We were set up in such a way that every student had an advocate on the staff. Every student had at least one member of the staff who knew him well. And every teacher or staff member had 15 to 20 kids that if you came and wanted to know something about this, about a particular student, and we could do it in a way that was anonymous, I could pick a name at random, and we could go to that person's faculty member, advisor, and that person would not be anonymous. And that was uh-huh. a key part to the reason the school worked. It didn't mean we didn't have our quote outcasts. We had some pretty unusual kids at the school, but they were never without a connection.
Now, did you have problems with anything like this kind of violence? Well, nothing's like this, but I mean, with serious violence in your school?
Well, the last school that I worked with was an alternative school in Denver.
Uh-huh.
And that was, again, it was a small school. It had a lot of gang members, though, and they were from all over the city. And though we had occasional problems, as one would expect, from what the kids told me, we had fewer problems than some of the other large schools because it was their school. So even kids from two rival gangs, when they were in the school, had a common feeling that it was their school, in part because each of them was known to somebody. I'll just tell you a quick story. It was a good example of this.
Go ahead.
There was a fight. I'd heard, I was in the office in this last school in Denver, and somebody came in and said, there's a fight in the cafeteria. So I ran down there. And two kids were really flailing at each other, and I grabbed one, and one of the teachers grabbed the other. And the kid I grabbed was really out of control, screaming, yelling, arms and legs flailing. And I don't know what possessed me to say it, but I whispered in his ear, I said, Roger, who's holding you? And he said, Arnie. And as he said it, he relaxed a bit.
Uh-huh.
I couldn't have done that if I didn't know him, if we weren't
right.
in a situation like that. And I think that was, for me, a really important lesson about the importance of nobody being a number, nobody being anonymous.
Wow, that's an amazing story. You know, it's interesting, when President Clinton spoke today about this, he talked about, specifically said, teaching kids to learn to, quote, resolve their conflicts with words and not weapons, unquote. And now, one of the things that I've talked about with these incidents in the past, you know, in Jonesboro, in Paducah, in Springfield, Oregon, and so on, one of the things that I've talked about is that in a lot of alternative schools, we have methods in place for kids to resolve conflicts with words. There are democratic processes in many of these that are in place so that nobody has a real reason to have to take it into their own hands and use violence. And I believe that this is one of the solutions of this kind of problem, but it would take an incredible overhaul of the public school system. And I think that you've been out there working, doing this for, as it is, 29 years now, trying to show people that this approach is one that can work. What do you think about that?
Well, I think it has to start a lot earlier than high school also. And I think that those methods are important, but again, those are almost less important than the connections, and that every kid have an adult that he trusts that he can turn to. But if we began that earlier, really young, if we thought that our purpose of education wasn't merely to fill people with facts, with the know-how, but that in addition to know-how was to know why and know who they are, and that that was considered equally important, then it's less likely these kinds of things would occur. But that has to begin from the earliest years. And though we may say, and maybe it's correct, that it should be done in the home or it should be done in the church, and those are reasonable expectations, but not for everybody. And in fact, for increasing numbers of kids, neither the home nor the church is able to accomplish that. And if we are, as a school system, have the kids for as long as we do, we have to take a larger portion of that responsibility.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is a very, very important stuff, I feel, that you're saying, Arnie. And if there are people who would like to call in and make some comments on this or ask some specific questions, they can call us at, if they're in Los Angeles County, 818-353-1276. And any place else in the country, they can call us at 800-336-2225. And you'll be hearing those numbers a little bit later. Who else is there with you, Arnie? I think there's somebody else who's supposed to be on the show.
Dogney is here, and Robert's here, but both of them said that they'd rather not participate.
Oh, okay. I know.
And I'm only going to stay on a little while longer, too, because Robert is a guest that I want to spend some time with, but I did want to respond.
Okay.
And I want to say one more thing.
Yeah.
What's really interesting to me and is the role of the teacher in a lot of this. I think a lot of teachers would have every bit as much reason to be upset, frightened by this as the students have. But I think that by and large, most teachers, given the support of the system, would be quite capable of helping kids if they started early enough and established the trust. I think most teachers would rather be have the time to get to know their kids and be able to be helpful to them. And if we could somehow figure out a way to stop pressuring the teachers to just get higher and higher test scores and fragment their learning more and more and get them back to what they can do best, which is be an advocate for kids, I think teachers can really be an important part of the solution, but not with the expectations we keep laying on them right now.
Right, right. They need some support, too, and they
Absolutely.
Need some help in this process also. Okay, and you know, I think that you mentioned Dagny is not going to come on the show, but I think she's directing a charter school. Is that right?
She's not a director of it. She's in charge of community liaison, which means getting people from the community into the school and getting kids out into the community. And it's another school that has some of the same attributes we've been talking about. Every kid has an advisor who knows him well. Teachers are expected to be dealing with the whole kid and not just with the
right.
cognitive portion. And it doesn't mean they don't have their problems, too, but the issue isn't what problems we have. The issue is how do we deal with them? And I think that's the difficulty. In the large impersonal schools, it's very difficult
right.
to deal with the problems. In the small school, that's part of our curriculum.
One of the things that we're going to take a break pretty soon, Arnie, but one of the things I want to ask you after the break is how you think that these ideas can be applied, or if they can be applied, to those millions of kids. It doesn't help if you've just got 1 or 2% experiencing these things. How do we get everyone to experience that? And so, as I say, we're going to take a break. And if the people would like to call into the show and ask any questions or make any comments about what's happened in Littleton, Colorado here today, the number to call is, if you're in Los Angeles County, 818-353-1276. And if you're any place else in the country, that's 800-336-2225. Again, 818-353-1276 and 800-336-2225. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back, and we have Mary calling from New York. Hello, Mary.
Hey, Jerry.
How you doing?
Yeah, nice to have you back.
Yeah, so you heard what Arnie had to say.
I'm sorry?
You heard about what Arnie was saying, huh?
I didn't hear much of it, no.
He was talking about what happened.
What I did hear that he said that was so important is that a child needs to have an adult that they can turn to. And that was an important thing that I heard him say. Jerry, I think we lost you again.
Yeah, go ahead.
You there?
Yeah, I'm here. I got to cut up for a second. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, I think it was very important that that he said that a child needs an adult that they can turn to, someone they can trust.
Right.
And I
right. And you know, the story told about, you know, that he's breaking up a fight that he could say the person, you know, do you know my name? You know, and yes, he did. And all of a sudden, he could relax. And I don't know, these things are subtle and so on. And one of the things that I was hoping Arnie would stay on for, he's just staying longer on the show, was to talk about how to possibly apply these ideas to the whole country. To the millions of kids, something like 53 million kids in school, you know, is it possible to do it? You know, I don't know how many people I've talked to. In fact, some have called into the show and said, you know, I went to a one-room school and, you know, they don't talk about, oh, we didn't have big gyms. They talk about the relationships that they had and the fact that the older kids taught the younger kids and that they had responsibilities and that they were respected. And I don't know how many people have done so well. Somewhere we got this idea 30, 40, 50 years ago that it was best, bigger was better somehow, and if you could have a really big school, that this was going to, make, you could have better sports teams and a bigger gym and more facilities, and in the process people didn't realize that they were, you know, losing contact with the individual student.
And now,
Mary?
And now the kids have no one to turn to.
Yeah, and there's so much anger, it's so frustrating. And furthermore, you've got a school system which is based on a concept that is just totally outmoded, that doesn't empower students, that doesn't really give them responsibility, that doesn't really give them respect. There may have been a time when that system was more functional and more useful, when kids were, you know, back 100 years ago, needing to learn how to work factories and so on. But today, certainly, where you've had some disintegration of families and so on, the school is more and more important that there were relationships that should be positive. They've done research about kids that have, for example, become survivors in situations where they wouldn't have done well. And usually there was at least one person, a teacher in school, a relative, somebody, that it connected with that person, made them feel important, made them feel that they could make it, you know. And I think that maybe, you know, if schools were smaller and if they were set up differently, we might have less of these kind of problems.
Well, you know, we have totally artificially stripped our schools of God, of any kind of God at all. Now, why can't the kids just bring in the God that they talk about at their home and talk about that? No, we can still be an integrated society and acknowledge that there's a higher power. And people can maybe choose even not to believe that if they want to, but why do we have to artificially strip that away from our kids? We take that away from them, then we send their mothers off to work, and we leave them home with the violence on the television and nobody to guide them through it, and then we have all the temptation all over the place. What do we expect to become of our kids? Terry?
Mary, this is Tomas here, CRN Central. We just sort of lost Jerry momentarily. Looked like we got a little connection problem. But you're right. There is a problem with basic spirituality and the lack of it or examples of it in the schools today.
Yeah, and, you know, we leave our kids, and then we leave them at home, and they have, you know, both parents working out of necessity or, you know, broken family or whatever, and then there's no one to turn to. And now our churches, even a lot of families that go to churches, it's more of a social event than a spiritual event. So we have our kids facing all this, but I wonder, has anyone looked at the research? Have these shootings all been in public schools?
The ones that we've heard about, you know, I think those were all public school. Jonesboro, Paducah,
the five major ones.
Springfield, those were all in public schools that we know of, yeah.
Because I know I hear them on TV and they're saying, well, they're looking for something in common, something these things have in common, and they're saying that they were all in rural areas. Well, the one in Littleton today is suburban, not rural.
Definitely suburban, yeah. It's a community of about 35,000 people, I heard, yeah.
So I think a bigger thing they have in common is they're all public schools. Shouldn't that be something we take note of?
Yeah, well, I would think so. If there are people listening to this that would like to get in on this discussion, I'd like to know what you're thinking. The number to call if you are in Los Angeles County is 818-353-1276. Again, that's 818-353-1276. And if you're anyplace else in the country, the number to call is 800-336-2225. That's 800-336-2225. As I said in the beginning of the show, I'm broadcasting this live from Colorado, right near where this all happened. It's just coincidental. I'm on my way to a conference out here of alternative schools that's going to take place about an hour away from Denver. And so I just happened to be in Denver here doing the show from here. And this just dropped like it's unbelievable. I mean, this happened. We changed the whole focus of what we were going to do the show on when we heard about this. And luckily, as I said, we had Arnie Langberg on earlier, who has been starting alternative schools in this very county where this happened, and talked about the reason for doing this and the reason why, you know, basically so that kids wouldn't feel anonymous and so that kids would feel that they were important and they were being heard. I talked to my niece, who is going to school out here and studying pre-veterinary medicine, and she commented about the kind of music that was on the website, which is an expression of an awful lot of anger and frustration. And I had an interesting experience, which I've mentioned to people before on earlier shows, when I went to a rap concert with my cousin's son, and it was one of the last things in the world I thought I would have done, but it was very instructive to me because it was a situation in which kids could express themselves and were being heard and could express their anger, and people on the stage were doing the same thing. And it was a sort of a vehicle for this to happen, and it was very enlightening for me to kind of see this and to kind of understand this whole culture that's out there. And it's a culture in which there isn't very much communication happening between generations.
Jerry, when we had some technical difficulties, Mary also brought up the point of the lack of spirituality, a lack of example in the schools, and likewise, many of the churches are not really enforcing that, or what we used to say, inculcating the students today, because churches have became more of social functions instead of spiritual or religious functions.
Uh-huh.
She mentioned that as we were trying to reconnect you. I thought I'd throw that out.
Yeah, right. No, thank you. Thank you, Tomas. Well, I didn't hear that comment, and I think it's extremely important. And you know, when you talk about the spiritual, well, you know, we may all have different ideas about what that means. But, for example, when I was in Russia, and I just felt that people were so much more important there to the people that I knew. They cared so much about people. You know, they didn't have the distraction of the televisions and the computer games and all these other things. And to me, that was a very, very interesting and important thing for me to learn, too. And even here in the United States now, some of my best friends here are people that I've met in that connection. Some of them have emigrated here but have retained that feeling about people and that caring about people. And it's something that I think has been sort of disappearing in a lot of places as people kind of get disconnected with their roots and with their past and with the things that they have believed in.
Yeah, you know, they get disconnected with their roots. Some families that are still going to church, maybe they're just doing it because that's the church their parents went to, and it's not something they've really selected for themselves, and maybe they're really not getting the spiritual support that they need. You know, we all come to a point where we feel like we're at our wit's end, and we need someone to turn to, and sometimes it's so private that we really just, you know, if we had a God that we believed in that we could turn to, that would be such a help. And you know,
okay, Mary, just we've got to take a break, and we'll be right back. And we really would welcome your calls. You'll hear the numbers during the break, and a good time to call is right now. We'll be right back.
Hey, teacher, leave them kids alone.
Okay, this is Jerry Mintz, and the show is The Education Revolution, and tonight we've been talking about this tragedy that's happened right here where we're broadcasting from in the Denver, Colorado area in the suburban town of Littleton. And I want to tell you that I came out here with a group of kids from an inner-city interracial school that is in Albany, New York. And these are kids that many of whom have no family money. And this is a school that is kind of remarkable. And just to kind of contrast that with maybe some other ideas of what schools could be, I want to just tell you a little bit about this. With this school, this is a private school that has no minimum tuition. And the tuition is very, very low even for most everyone else. And the reason is because the people who founded the school bought up inner city row houses in Albany, New York, for as little as $500. And then they all learned how to fix these houses up and, you know, straighten out the foundations and finish them off into nice apartments. And they rented out the apartments. And the money that they raise from the apartments raises most of the money to keep the school going. And now, so the kids are coming to the school. As I say, it's an interracial school with, you know, a lot of low-income kids. And so when they wanted to go when they want to go on a trip somewhere, and I actually kind of originally told them how to do this, they do fundraising of various sorts. They get sponsors, they raise the money, they go to their community, they have raffles, they have big dinners that they make for everybody coming in. And they raised about $4,000, which was enough for 12 of them, teachers and students, to take a train trip out and to pay for the conference that they're going to in these next few days out here in Colorado. And so that was the event brought me out here. And I hooked up with them. I started in New York and met them when we got to Albany and continued on with them. We stopped in Chicago for a few hours and went out to see the Sears Tower. And continued on and got to Colorado just this morning on the train. And it wasn't until this afternoon that we heard about this thing now. And in fact, the ironic thing is that most of this group right now is sleeping at one of those schools in Jefferson County right now. That the school, and this was arranged long before all of this, you know, anybody knew anything about this. And so I wish I could be in touch with them. I'm in a different part of Denver right now, so I can't do that. But this is in contrast to this. And these are kids that otherwise I don't know really what would have happened to them, because a lot of them, one of the kids, for example, that I talked to a lot on the train was a kid who had been on Ritalin and called a hyperactive kid and so on. And one of the things that they do when they go to the schools, they take them off all drugs, including those drugs. And this kid is doing fine, and he raised the money so he could come on this trip and was happy as a lark, you know, to be able to do it.
Now, see, that's a kid that has self-direction. You know, he's been given a challenge and said, here, you know, we're offering you this. You can do this. And he had something to work on, you know, something that he could control.
Right, exactly. And that's the neat thing about this, is that all the kids learn by a process like this is you can make these things happen. You can go on a nice long major trip halfway across the country to an event like this, even if you don't have any money, and you can do it in a very positive way, and a way that even helps connect you to your community.
And I think when kids have projects like that they're working on, they don't have time to think about killing their classmates.
Yeah, well, you know, we have to talk about what causes this kind of anger to build up. And as I said, I think a lot of it comes from kids feeling like they're outcasts, like they're not part of a community, like they're not communicating. And in a smaller school, and this is one of the things that I talked to Arnie about in the beginning of this show, in a smaller school, if there were kids doing this kind of thing, they're kind of saying something in the process of doing this. And I think that that needs to be heard, and I think that it needs to be discussed, and people have to say, you know, what's behind this? What are you feeling? Why do you feel this way? Well, and it doesn't happen in a big school of a couple of thousand, in which kids tend to be, you know, even, well, you know, the thing that's amazing to me is that the kids were aware of this. The kids were aware of this situation, and apparently, this is unsubstantiated, but apparently one kid even knew that these kids were building weapons. And had reported it to the police. And the police apparently hadn't responded to it or taken it seriously.
Now, see, that's not coming across on CNN.
Yeah.
We're not hearing that.
We heard this on the local news here.
Yeah, and see, one of the things that we're hearing is that they targeted specific people. Not specific people, but specific groups.
Categories. Yeah, I heard that they were minorities and jocks, we heard, you know, something
right.
like that.
Right.
But go ahead.
You know, if as parents, you know, we want to know when we're faced with something like this as parents, we're scared to death because we see it's happening in these nice little communities, and we know, even if we want to be in denial about it, we know it can happen in our own town, wherever we live. And we're scared to death, and so we want to think, you know, what can we do? What can we do to prevent this from happening? We need something to do. We need something, you know, give us something that we can do. We'll feel a little better. And, you know, if you are a parent who is promoting, you know, racial tension, you know, you may be doing it thinking it's just your little thing, but you've got to understand that your kids are learning this, and now they've got bigger weapons and toys than we ever did. And, you know, if you're a parent who hasn't worked that out in your mind, then, you know, for your kids' sake, you might want to start doing that and start to, you know, go back to those commercials that we heard in the early 60s. You know, be careful what you say to your little flowers, because they're going to go out there and they're going to spread it, and it's going to be big and ugly and violent and painful just like today.
You know, one of the things I wonder about, and I don't have an answer to this myself at all, you know, you look at the violence that is happening on the other side of the world, and you look at our solution to the violence and the problems that we saw of this attempt at ethnic cleansing and perhaps genocide, was to drop bombs on them. And you look at the computer games that the kids have, and the response, you know, half of those games, two-thirds of them, show violence as the, you know, the way to deal with the problems. And somehow or other, we have to get off of that track. And I just don't know what the best way is to do it.
And, you know, we do need to look for commonalities. We need to ask ourselves, why is this happening now in the 90s? And why, you know, why didn't it happen in the 80s and the 70s and the 60s like this? You know, in the 60s, when kids got mad at each other, they had a fist fight.
Yeah.
Now they're killing each other. And now they're just throwing, you know, first it was knives and then it was guns. You know, like in the 80s, it was knives, and in the 90s, it's guns and bombs.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I don't really have any answers to it. And again, I would like to remind our listeners out there that we'd like to hear from you. I know that you're probably all as stunned as we are and as people are here in Denver. And I'd be glad to answer any questions of anybody out there about what we've heard here, because it sounds like we've heard a few things here on local TV that people may not have heard on national TV. But just call into the show right now. This is live, and the number, if you're in Los Angeles County, to call is 818-353-1276. That's 818-353-1276. And if you're anyplace else in the country, the number to call is 800-336-2225. That's 800-336-2225. We have about 20 minutes left of this show. And before I forget it, I want to do want to mention that we do have sponsors out there, and the number that you've heard in the advertisements in the breaks is our office number. And if anybody wants information on alternative schools, how to find them, and how to start homeschooling, and Mary is our homeschooler, by the way. I don't think she's mentioned that yet.
Not on this
she's
call.
She's in New York. But if you're interested in information on that, or you know, you can call our office number, and you can do it right now if you want, and that number is 800-769-4171. One of our sponsors is the Laurel Springs Independent Study Program, and Laurel Springs, the thing that's kind of interesting about it is that they have an internet-based homeschool program so that kids can actually graduate from high school on this program. And if you're interested in getting involved in that, the number to call is the same one I mentioned, 800-769-4171. And one other thing is that, you know, I did mention, I've mentioned earlier that on earlier programs, we have a sponsor that's a computer manufacturer. And he asked me not to say too much about it tonight because he's been so overwhelmed. He's gotten behind in fulfilling the orders, but he still is sending out the new computers for $800 and the used ones for $100. So, again, you can call our number if you want the information on that and you want to get involved with that. Again, the number is 800-769-4171. And we have Melissa calling from Rhode Island. Melissa, how you doing? Hi, Melissa.
Hello.
Hi. Where are you in Rhode Island?
Oh, East Providence.
East Providence.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and so what's on your mind tonight, Melissa?
Oh, I was just hearing about the Colorado cases, and I was wondering if there's anything we can do over here to help, because I'm also in high school, and I'm graduating.
Yeah.
And if something like this happened to my school, I would freak out, and I know these families are, like, in pain, and these children are in pain, and I want to find something to help them.
Well, you know, they're flashing a number on right now that's the Jefferson County Mental Health, the trauma number, and I'm just going to give you that number because maybe there's some way you can talk to somebody, you know. The number is 303-425-0300. I'm just looking on the TV as they're doing this. Did you get that number down?
Yep.
And, you know, maybe they can give you some way that you can help or give somebody moral support or something like that. Have you ever had anything like that happen at your school or anything remotely like that, Melissa?
No, but I hear it all the time, and it's very disturbing because I wanted to stop.
And how big is your school?
Oh, like 1,500 kids.
1,500.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a public school?
Yep.
Uh-huh. And what have you had any kind of violence in your school, you know, any kind of assaults or fights and things like that?
Nothing.
What?
Nothing like that. Nothing at all.
So this never happens in your school?
No.
If there are problems between kids, do you have a method of working them out? Is there a mediation team or anything like that in your school?
No, I have no idea. I don't think so, because nothing at all like this ever happened, because our school is very, like, culturally and racially diverse.
Uh-huh.
And so we pretty much get along really easily.
Wow. That's great. And what would you say the kind of income background is for the people in your school?
Well,
again, very diverse?
Yeah, it is, because I'm not all that rich, and there's really rich kids in our school, too.
And people seem to be getting, what do you think the secret is? What happens in your school that seems to make this happen? So, you know, when you talk about outcasts like these kids seem to be, there are no kids like that that you feel are outcasts in your school?
Outcasts?
Yeah.
Like, the only outcasts that I would say would be, like, the gothic kids, but they make themselves outcasts. They, like, always wear black, and they're, they don't like talking to people.
Okay, listen, I want to talk to you more about that. We've got to take a break, but stay on the line, okay? Because I think that's a very interesting point. We've got to take a break, and we'll be right back after this. What do you mean by the gothic kids in your school?
Because
I think this is very key.
Well, there's different people. There's, like, the alternative people. There's the rockheads, the preppies, that's what we call them. People who like hip-hop and rap, and then there's the gothic kids, and they like wear black clothing and black hair. They dye their hairs. They have a lot of, like, accessories on their face, and they're very to themselves. And those are the most unsocial people, but that's pretty much it about them.
And you feel like they ostracize themselves?
Yeah, I have one friend that's a gothic person,
yeah.
And, like, I had to approach him, because I just went up to him, I was like, just talking in the hallways, and he just stopped, and I was like, oh, hi, you know, being nice and all, and he started talking to me, but he's very distant. He, like, doesn't like hanging around me. He likes hanging around his other friends.
But he's became a friend of yours, or what?
Huh? Yeah, he's somewhat my friend right now.
Uh-huh. So, in other words, maybe he just needed someone to reach out to him a little bit.
Yeah. Like, but the thing is, he doesn't talk to me much. Like, whenever his friends come around, he doesn't like letting them know that I'm his friend.
But if you had to feel like which group of all those you mentioned was be most likely to do something, to turn to violence like this, do you think that would be the group?
Well, it depends on the person, but it's usually the more secluded people, like the more quiet to themselves, and like the more you try to open up to them, the more they close up. It's usually that side of the, like, it's usually the gothic people who do that to me. So, like, I really wouldn't be, like, the perfect person to ask this, but, you know, if that happened in my school, it'd definitely be, like, some of them, maybe.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, this is interesting. Well, you know, I'm gonna put someone on for a minute just to talk to you because my niece is sort of could fit that description, and she's right here, and I'm gonna put her on just to see what comment she might like to make about this. She, by the way, she's in pre-veterinary medicine school here in the Denver area. Hold on a second.
Hi.
Hello.
Okay, well, I'm not really sure what Jerry wants me to say, but, I don't know, I think that you're right, at least partially. I mean, a lot of people who, I guess, most people who consider themselves Gothic are kind of dark and secluded for their own, because they want to be. But a lot of people, other people will look at and be like, oh, well, that person is Gothic. I mean, my hair is dyed black, you know, comes down to my waist, everything that I own is black. And yeah, you know, I'm a dark person a lot of the time, and I'm secluded a lot of the time, but I don't know, I mean, I think also a lot of people look at people who look like that and think that they want to be secluded when they don't always. And, I mean, I don't know, I think that that some of them, I mean, like, I have a pretty decent amount of friends and social things. But sometimes it's just, sometimes they actually would rather be alone when they're not left alone, and that's part of the problem.
You have any comment about that, Melissa?
Well, like, the more I try to open up to people like that is, like, the more they try to push me away. So, like, probably just in my community right now, because there's, you know, you can't just, like, say this person's in this category because everyone's always different. And so, like...
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, I think almost nobody fits into a category, exactly. And people who want to be categorized just have a problem. Yeah, you know, I can't imagine that anybody would want to fit into a specific category, be called a specific thing, whether it's a prep, a jock, a goth, whatever. I just can't imagine somebody wanting to be that. I mean, wouldn't everybody want to be themselves?
Yeah.
Whatever it is that they are?
Yeah. I honestly don't find myself fitting in any of those categories because I like every type of music and I hang with any type of person. But there are these specific people who just always click together, and that's how they get the group name.
Right. Well, yeah, but I think that the people who want to be called that or who want to be in a clique or a group or be called a certain thing, whatever it is they think they are, whatever kind of person they think they are, they're really nothing but... a wannabe. I mean, they're nothing. They just want to be like their friends. Well, anyway, I need to give you back to Jerry now. Here you go.
Okay, well, thanks a lot, Jennifer. I just thought it'd be interesting because I was just having this discussion earlier with Jennifer about the music that these kids posted on their website, and you know, it seemed to reflect a certain kind of attitude, you see. Well, thanks a lot for calling, Melissa.
Okay.
And it's been nice talking to you. And I don't know if is anybody waiting, Tomas?
Yes, Carla.
Hi.
Okay, we have Carla. Carla, where are you calling from?
Johnston, Rhode Island.
Okay, and what's on your mind today?
Well, I just wanted to...
Can you speak up a little bit?
Yeah, can you hear me okay?
Go ahead.
Let me mute my TV so that I can...
Go ahead.
I just wanted to... say that I think we need to go back to basics. I think that taking prayer out of school, taking off the walls in the courthouses and all this other is just denoting who put this whole ordeal together to begin with.
What do you mean by basics?
I mean basics like KISS, keep it simple. Stupid, you know, I'm not...
Yeah, keep it simple, stupid. But what do you mean by that in terms of, are you talking about school, home, or what?
All of it. I mean, we just have to get back to God, period. I mean,
yeah.
Where did it all start? You think about it. You know, this...
But what does that mean, getting back to God? What does that have to do? How does that mean you treat people? How does it mean kids are treated?
If we all get back into God in this country, then what is God all about? God's love. God is love. That's what the Bible clearly states. I mean, you know, I read the Bible. I consider myself a Christian, but I'm not, you know, I don't go to church all the time, and I'm not perfect, and no one in this world is. But I see that, you know, if we go back to the simplicity of things, we won't be so pressured by who can outbuy their the other neighbor's kids, or who can outbuy, you know, what the best is on the market. I think that everybody's rushing to get nowhere. We're all born into this world with nothing, and we're all going to die and take nothing out. What are we fighting for? Over jealousy? Over greed? I mean, you know.
But the problem, I want to just say that the problem, I think, for a lot of kids is that they feel that the traditional religious approaches have very little meaning to them, doesn't speak to them at all, and they are becoming alienated from this process. One of the things that struck me when I went to this rap concert was it looked to me like nothing more or less than a real, almost religious ceremony. There was responsive reading, in a sense. Every kid knew every one of those rap lyrics, and they would scream them out with their arms waving and so on. And sometimes it was profanity, but it was sort of like giving them permission to express their anger and their feelings by doing that. And I don't think there was one parent there, you know, and I think that they don't understand that this is... It's one way that there's some kind of expression going on. And I don't know that just the traditional religions are going to make it for a lot of kids out there.
Oh, believe me, I don't think the traditional religions are going to do it, because they haven't been tutored. They haven't been raised up. Like, now I'm in my 40s, and we were raised up to go to church every week, you know. And so we've got some basics under our belt, but the kids today... You know, then they don't have it. The parents are so precious to just make ends meet. And,
another caller on hold.
Okay, Carla, we got one other caller. We're going to try to squeeze him in now, and because we only have a few minutes left. Thanks for calling. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Great.
Okay. Call again next week too. And who have we got on hold? I didn't catch your name. What's your first name?
Cheryl from Central Falls.
What's your first name?
Cheryl from Central Falls.
Central Falls, where?
Rhode Island.
Okay, everyone from Rhode Island today. Okay,
yes.
Go ahead, Cheryl.
We're enjoying the show.
Great. Go ahead.
Hi, Jerry. Thanks
for
speaking with me. I just basically wanted to reiterate what Carla from Johnston was saying.
Yeah.
She's talking some truth here about our children. And one of the things that I do remember growing up in the 60s and 70s is that we had some foundation that I don't feel that kids are really getting in schools these days.
Yeah.
And
kind of foundations?
Well, I think one of the foundations is that we had a lot of pride about who we were and our country and about God and our heritage. And I don't think that's instilled in kids in their homes or either in the educational institutions.
Right.
I think that God is a very important foundation because this country was founded on the principles of God. And I think since we've taken these things out of our educational institution, that it really has impacted our children. And
Mary, hold on a second. Mary had a comment to make.
Well, I was just saying, yes, because we've artificially stripped God. I mean, it's not like they're even allowed to just come in and talk about God as they will individually.
Mm-hmm. Well, how would you approach these kids from what you've heard about them?
Right.
With your message, what would you say that would get through to them?
I think, first of all, it's not about tradition when we're talking about God, and it's really not about religion.
Right.
I don't think that God is religious like man is. I think a lot of things are in the church now is very dogmatic. And we're talking, yes, God is, he expresses himself, and he would expect us to express ourselves to him.
I just don't know if you're going to get through to the kids.
Well, I think there are certain ways. We have to change the way we are interacting with children in the schools, and we have to understand that times change. And that they're not going to want to adapt to the way that we believe, and the way we dress, and the way we act, and the things that we do.
And
those
also,
things
that
were
that's
fun for
teach
us.
Huh? It's going to teach us that anger is our enemy.
It's okay to be angry, though.
Right.
It's okay.
Yeah, it's okay.
It's what you do with your anger.
Yeah, Yeah, but, you know, anger is the thing that's going to eat us alive. You know, we can find some other thing to do with our anger.
Well, it sounds like today maybe that's what happened in this tragedy here. Well, listen, we've only got 30 seconds left. I want to thank you for calling in, Cheryl.
Thank you.
And Mary, thank you for calling and being with us. And thank Arnie Langberg, who was in earlier. And if anybody has anything more that they want to follow up on, if they would like to, they can call our 800 number at 800-769-4171. If you want information on alternative education, homeschooling, and any of that stuff. And we'll see you next week on the Education Revolution. Thanks for being with us, everybody.